Nobody would be just exercising tracking hounds in the middle of the evening. The corpses had been found, and someone had decided that the murderer should be hunted down. Maybe they figured that a man responsible for a pile of bloody dead might well be carrying some kind of a price on his head. The river glinted to his right through a thin screen of willows. Above him, the moon was glittering like a new minted coin, giving plenty of light to pursuers. At his best, given such a good start, Ryan would have had confidence in himself to simply run away from whoever was trailing him. But he was still far from peak fitness, plagued by the repeated injuries to his wounded thigh. He was already limping, ready to rest. The ground was low and the track was winding between swampy meadows, with pools of brackish water seeping between the tussocks of coarse grass. It looked like the only thing to do was keep going on the country road and hope to find some way of cutting off it and throwing the dogs off his scent. Right now, Ryan wasn't keen on blundering into the muddy ways that stretched to the river on his right and toward the indistinct shape of a lake on the left. Trees closed in on him on both flanks, and the trail snaked sharply left and right, making it impossible to see far ahead. Ryan knew how difficult it was to judge sound at night, but his best guess had to put the pursuit around 2 miles back. Call it 15 minutes if they were moving fast. He moved on at a sort of shambling, limping jog. Bends opened out, and he was finally able to see for a good mile ahead of him, the road now running arrow straight. It was built up higher on a levee, with the swamp pressing on both sides, the river bending away a quarter mile or more to the north. There was absolutely no sign of any cover. Ryan stopped, biting his lip, considering the possibility of plowing through the bayous to his right and then risking swimming the river. It was the best part of a half mile wide, and there was a fair risk that the swamps would be home to all manner of murderous creatures.
Shit.
Ryan was within 100 yards of the far end of the straight section of the trail. There was no sign of where the bullet went, but Ryan was confident he was safely out of range of anything except a fluke shot with a spent round. Feeling the sharpness of a stitch biting under his ribs, Ryan turned, doubled over. He made out the dark smudge of his pursuers. At best, they were less than 1,200 yards behind and closing fast. He wasn't sure, but it looked as if there were horsemen among them. Now that they had him made, there was no need to wait for the hounds. They would simply spur on and hope to ride him down within minutes. In less than 5 minutes, they'd be on top of him. He turned again and stared ahead, spotting the golden glimmer of a collection of oil lamps off to the right, down a narrow spur track toward the north, toward the river. There was no way of concealing his route. The few clouds that decorated the starry night were nowhere near the moon. Ryan had to simply choose between the inevitability of being caught on the main trail or chancing the sidetrack with the strong possibility that it would finish in a dead end, offering him only the dubious hope of trying to swim the big river. He chose the latter. There were 4 or 5 small huts gathered close together at the end of the narrow road, with a tumble-down jetty and some nets hanging over poles. Ryan realized, with a shudder of something close to fear, that he was nearly at the end of his tether. The battering in the gorge and his time in the coma had caught up with him, and he was on the brink of exhaustion. He stared blankly across the endless expanse of the river, and knew deep in his heart that he had no chance of swimming it. A mongrel dog came out of the nearest cabin, its tail stiff, teeth bared, sidling toward him. There'd been no more shooting, no more wasted ammunition. He figured that they knew the area better than he, and were confident of being able to ride him down without any trouble. At least he could make sure that the bastards paid a high blood price. The dog came in so fast, low and silent, that it took Ryan by surprise, all of his attention diverted to the pursuers. He turned around to face it, just as it was powering up at him, out of its attacking crouch, its jaws gaping.
Oh, fuck!
It scrabbled to regain its feet after Ryan punched it. Then it came at him again. Ryan held his panga in his right hand. The brindle dog went for his ankles. He pulled the hone cleaver from the base of the animal's stubby, muscular neck.
You've done for my dog, you outland bastard!
The man was very tall, looming out of the door of the same hut.
come to steal our buggering boats, have you?
Boats?
Suddenly, Ryan saw them, pulled in tight in the shadows of the jetty. Three small fishing craft, with masts and sails stowed away. The man held a long billhook and stepped out into the moonlight, waving it menacingly at the intruder.
I cut your bastard lights out for doing that, good old Jerry Lee! They after you! Yeah, that's it!
Ryan drew the Sig Sauer. Ryan then turned toward his pursuers.
You bastard!
Ryan hobbled toward the jetty, gritting his teeth against the tiredness and pain. A woman appeared from another hut, waving a long-handled axe at him.
Damn you!
Five left.
One of the boats was being repaired, its ribs stripped bare. Ryan aimed at the second boat. The bloodied conga was still in his left hand, and Ryan swung it at the rope mooring the third of the boats. The strong current of the river immediately began to tug the boat away from the jetty, bringing the bow toward the northern bank so fast that Ryan was taken by surprise and barely managed to throw himself clumsily aboard. Ryan could see men rushing between the huts toward the landing stage. The boat was moving faster now. Ryan flattened himself over the bottom boards and wearily closed his eye. The first pale light of the false dawn, fingering from the east, awakened him. His head ached, and his legs felt as though he'd run 50 miles across plowed fields with hot irons drilled through his muscles. As he moved his arm, he winced at a painful swelling in his shoulder, which he vaguely remembered had come as he'd sprawled desperately into the drifting boat. He felt for the Sig Sauer, drawing it from the holster, mentally reproaching himself for leaving it with only a single round left under the hammer.
Good thing JB isn't here.
When he reached down to the other hip for the panga, it wasn't there, and for a moment he figured he had left it out on the jetty. Then he found the blade, with dark brown smears on it, lying underneath him in the bottom of the boat. He quickly wiped it clean and resheathed it. Only then did Ryan take note of his surroundings. The river was even wider, its color changed, dirtier, carrying a lot of brownish mud. The land on either side was flatter, with a scattering of trees. Ryan spotted a couple of farmers, one walking behind an ox-drawn plow, the other working at laying a hedge on the flank of a large field. Farther to the north, he could see a trim farmhouse, with smoke curling from the chimney and a neat orchard to its side. But it was what lay ahead of the boat that drew Ryan's attention. Less than a quarter mile downstream were the beginnings of a large ville that he guessed had to be Twin Forks, where the Big White ran into the Sippy, forming one of the largest river meetings in the whole of Deathlands. Ryan was sure the trader had called there with the war wag several times over the years he'd ridden with him, but he could remember surprisingly little of the place. It was centered on the trade that came from the big river. The docks ran north to south, ready to cater to the endless stream of freighters and carriers. There had been a countless number of saloons and gaudies, as you'd expect for a busy ville like Twin Forks, making itself open and available, like a warm-hearted whore, to all of the travelers and merchants. And there had been the big steam-driven paddle-wheelers, huge as a city block, brightly painted, going all the way down to New Orleans, offering every kind of gambling and vice that a man or a woman could want. There had been all sorts of accommodation on board the splendid vessels, at all prices. Several of them had steam-powered calliopes built into their upper decking that would play all the popular old tunes as the great stern wheels thrashed the river into white foam. Ryan realized for the first time that there was a pair of oars lying in the bottom of the vessel. He picked them up and slid them into the iron oarlocks. He aimed the boat toward the nearest of a long row of drab docks. It was a fine morning, with the sun peering over the eastern horizon behind him. Ahead, there was a three-masted schooner casting off, and a black-painted ketch was tacking away toward the west. Despite the early hour, Twin Forks was bustling with commercial life. Christie's lover was wearing a long gray raincoat, walking barefoot over cobblestones beneath a drizzling sky. He was part of a slow-moving column that trudged along, their heads down, silent, some carrying bags and cases that held their few poor possessions. About a quarter of them were children.